What role does hope play in the lives of human beings? Welcome to Good Word. I am Dave Thomas, your host today. With me are my conversational partners who've been with me for a while, Paul Dibdalt and Brant Berglund. Gentlemen, we have an interesting lesson here today, talking about hope and the role that hope plays in life. And we're thinking about this in a final sense, or in a particular sense, in the context of the controversy between good and evil. What thoughts come to your mind when you think of hope and the role it plays?
This is going to be an obvious statement, but hope is central. If we have nothing sort of beckoning us into the future, it's very, very difficult to live today in the present. Yeah. So, boy, and what a difference hope will make.
I can't recall any specific stories at the moment, but I have in the back of my mind a number of like tragic moments when people have needed rescue, and because they knew that there was someone who was on the way, they held out in ways that should never have happened. And I think hope does that, right? Hope gives you a chance to keep pressing forward.
Yeah, now you constrain me to tell a story. When I was in college, there was a young woman who was part of our youth group. She was a little older than the rest of us, but she told us one day that she had been to the doctors, and they told her that the bones in her neck had become brittle and that she needed to be very careful because if she fell down, it could break and sever her spinal cord, and she could die in a moment. But then they told her that they could treat it, but it would take a year, and she would have to be in hospital for most of that time. And then what they were going to do is they were going to stretch her spine until they got it where they wanted, and they would fuse portions of it and inject some kind of substance that would make the bones strong again, and then she would have to go to rehab and suffer, but it would be a whole year. The next to the last time I saw her, we went into Boston, and she was lying there on a bed in what's called a striker frame. She had a halo screwed to her head, you know, that and it was attached to the bed. And then off her feet were, as I recall, 12 pounds of weights, 6 pounds on each leg. And she had to lie there for 3 months while those weights gradually stretched out her neck and her spine so they could be the place where they wanted it to be. And then they fused it. Well, I moved away. And years went by, and I always wondered about her. When we were at a scholars' convention in Boston some years ago, I went on Sabbath. I went up to the church where I interned. It was not far from Boston. And I walked in the door, and who do you think was greeting people? We embraced each other. I hadn't seen her in, I don't know, 25 years or more. And I said to her, "So how are you doing?" She says, "I'm doing very well." She said, "I'm very happy. My health problems stabilized." She says, "I write poetry." And I said, "So what in the world sustained you through all of that?" And she says, "Well, I kept in my mind, there was hope because of what the doctors had told me, that if I went through this, what you were saying, Paul, if I endured this, I would come out on the other side to a much better, and they thought, a permanent solution." She says, "And that's exactly what happened." But she says, "I had to hold on to that hope because some of those days, especially lying in that bed, she couldn't get up out of the bed. You know, she had she was in, and they could flip the bed over. So sometimes she was on her stomach, and sometimes she was on her back. She was there for 3 months without ever getting out of that bed." She said, "I clung to that hope."
And yet, with the human, even the best doctors, you know, they give this percentage of possibility of recovery. The biblical accounts of hope are a little more secure than that. In fact, it says it's almost as if the event is so sure, it just simply hasn't happened yet. It will happen. And the hope isn't in something that may. And, you know, you get a 80-20 chance. It's as if it's already taken place. And so that's maybe a little different. Am I off base on that?
This hope starts all the way back in Genesis 3 in the Bible, where you wonder at the devastation that Adam and Eve felt when the whole creation was destroyed or damaged by sin. And they have this one little promise that comes to them. And, of course, that's a cryptic report we have. I don't know what God actually told them, but just that little about the
offspring of the woman.
And the serpent.
Crushing the head.
Yeah, but there's an injection of hope there. And you have to wonder, here everything looked dismal to them, and then there's this injection of hope. And I imagine that they clung to that with everything they had.
Yeah, there's a difference. This again, my initial statement, I think, was an obvious one. But this slight difference to me is significant. It's not the existence of hope that actually makes the difference. It's that I actually believe I have hope Because there are situations that there's actually a good possibility, let's say, of a positive outcome. But if I don't somehow personalize that and actually believe that to be true for me, then the reality of the actual reality of hope doesn't have the same impact unless I believe it.
And I don't want to give too much force to this idea of simple self-talk, but that's a part of it, isn't it? That even if things don't look good, if I tell myself, no, there's a chance. But are there people then who talk themselves out of a great opportunity simply because they are unwilling to accept the conditions?
Sure.
That's sad that hope is there for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think your point is well made, though, Paul, that I have to personalize that hope. Otherwise, it doesn't do much for me.
You could give – so you think of the really sort of crass example, but let's say a medical diagnosis and they say, 98% fatality, you know, that it doesn't end well. And the two people could hear that in very, very different ways, right? One person could say, well –
then
that's
there's
all
chance.
Over, right?
Yeah.
And someone else says, exactly.
I'm going for the 2%.
There's hope. Like, I've got it. There's a shot.
You should have done 50-50, though.
Yeah, I could have done it a little less dramatic.
But hope has been part of our faith culture, you know, right? For over 150 years. Yeah. You know, this expectation that the blessed hope, as Paul calls it in Titus, is that we get to see the glorious appearing of Christ come back, right? The same Jesus who left will come back in the same way he left. I would love to see Jesus personally, and I'd love to be alive to do so. I know the miracle of resurrection is an amazing thing. I guess I'm one of those who would like to be alive to see him in my lifetime. And is that a weird hope? I would like to be alive to see the events of this earth wrap up and to see him come.
I don't see how that's a weird hope at all. I would think that the opposite might be a little even weirder.
It comes when you consider that some of the biblical end time issues are not
concerned about trouble.
Not ones you want to live through.
I know quite a few people who hope that they die before that all happens because they're afraid of what precedes the coming of Jesus.
But the hope, you know, even Jesus' signs that he gives in Matthew 24 related to, you know, the signs when the disciples ask him about the destruction of Jerusalem and his coming, and he begins to give these signs. These are the beginning of the birth pains. It's like, well, at the end of birth pains, though they ramp up at the end, there's a glorious birth, right? There's new life, and I'd like to see the new life. I'd like to see that get birthed. No matter how bad the pains are. I know. I've never been pregnant. I'm the wrong person to ask. I get that.
Well, and Dave and I are not the right ones to ask about that either. So.
Yeah. Because the official lesson talked about the great disappointment, how William Miller and the Millerites were so confident in the fulfillment of their promise that they actually set a date. And then, of course, it was disappointed. And it's still – I don't know. Some people laugh at them over that. I have been to – William Miller Farm, and I've gone out on what they call Redemption Rock. It's a bare rock that sits in the woods where those people sat, and I've read some of their diaries and the profound disappointment they had. And the disappointment was not that their calculations failed, but that their expectation was not realized. They had so hoped to see Jesus in person. And yet some of them retained hope. They decided, well, we made a mistake in our calculations, but not in our overall vision of a return.
Mm-hmm. And it's remarkable what that small piece of hope in that small group of believers has done. We're not a small group of people in the world. I mean, we're not insignificant, right? I mean, the millions and millions of people now from a handful, right? But that's exactly what happened with the start of Christianity. Right? These 12, you know, people have turned the world upside down. That shows what hope will do.
Yeah, and I think I forget who it is who's actually traced it. Wherever you find people talking about the Second Advent, it's traced back to William Miller. You know, there's a trail that goes back because he's the one who revived that hope, even though it's been resident in the Bible all along. It was obscured by other things, you know. What do you do about the time of trouble? I mean, that affects the hope in some people's lives.
it depends on which time of trouble. I mean, I think there are several described in Scripture, several different types of experiences. There's the persecution that comes from outside, from the secular world. There seems to be difficulty that comes from within, from the Christian world. But the biggest times of trouble described, like Jacob's trouble, yeah, he's wrestling. It's not with the external. It's ultimately maybe even metaphorical. It's the internal wrestling with your own frailty and your own need for God, and it's the wrestling of Jesus on the cross. My God, why have you forsaken? That's the worst kind of struggle, right?
Yeah, but I'm thinking of the one that Daniel talks about that prior to the coming of Christ.
Yeah, and then when end of Daniel 11, beginning of chapter 12, there will be a great time of distress such as never was, and Jesus talks about it in Matthew 24 as well. That time of trouble, it's been suggested, has been that equated with the 1260 days of papal domination, right? If that's the case, that one's over. It's a last day trouble that I look to, and my greatest trouble today is not external. It's the internal day-to-day struggle I have with walking with Jesus all the time.
I think about the issue he raised about the cares of this life, the phrase that he used. And what are those? What are the cares of this life? They're the ordinary day-to-day things that distract us from thinking on a much grander scale.
And we touched on this previously. I think I mentioned something about this. But when we think of denying Christ, right, we think of this final, very clear decision that we have to make. And in that situation, I think many of us would make a right decision. But and so to think about time of trouble, I think there's a tendency, at least in my faith tradition, in Seventh-day Adventism, this idea that, you know, you're kind of watching for it there on the horizon. And it's possible if you're looking for some big obstacle or trouble far out there, you can trip over relatively small things that are right in front of you. And I think that metaphor for me, Grant, I think connects with what you said.
Yeah.
That day-to-day walking with Jesus, living in the expectant hope of his coming, rather than sort of waiting for the time of trouble to then be the alert, oh, okay, now I got to get my act together and really sort of become a really spiritual person. I think that's a dangerous way to live.
Yeah.
Well said. Well, thank you, Brent and Paul. And my thanks to Kristen Biley, our engineer. And my thanks to you for listening in. For Good Word, I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.